Hey guys, I'm Alex.
And I'm Drew.
And today on the Two Man Comic Book Club podcast, we're taking a look at JLA Tower of Babel from the year 2000. Let's go.
That's okay.
It happens. You practice an intro, you do it 84 times.
Yep.
Doesn't matter.
For the record, we're going to be breaking this Tower of Babel four-part story into two episodes. So today we're covering number 43 and 44.
Yeah. So also don't be confused. It's not Tower of Babel number one. This is just kind of a mini arc inside the ongoing.
If you were to look at the cover, it does say JLA number 43, Tower of Babel, part one of four.
Yep.
So
we're excited about this one. This is a little different than some of the other stories. This is a pretty iconic comic book story, like not just DC. Like this is one that's been talked about for a long time. When did this come out? 2000?
2000.
Yep.
And I feel like the concept of it, which we won't get to until, well, I mean the concept, the point that, because Alex has read this, before I did, and he made a comment that, He said what it was about.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's been pulled on for multiple stories, mm-hmm. different times. So it's kind of cool.
I didn't think about it when I had described it to Drew, just how much I had spoiled.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking that. I was like, this whole time, I was like, okay, when's this going to happen? I still enjoyed it. It didn't ruin anything for me.
It had just been so long that I just kind of assumed that. What we'll end up talking about, probably not until episode, well, I guess the very, very end of this, we'll get a little wink at what has happened.
Yeah.
But it was nice to revisit this again.
Before we get too far into it, I want to say, if you're listening to this, I would really appreciate it if you let us know if you notice a difference. I bought a new preamp for my microphone because mine had been hissing for a while. Yeah. I'm curious if you notice audio quality difference in this. Is it better? Is it worse? Is it the same? Do you even notice?
I think it's better.
Just let it. I feel like I hear a lot less hissing, mm-hmm. but now I hear the hissing from Alex's microphone, so I need to buy another one.
Yeah. Good thing we make so much money doing this podcast.
Lies.
Awesome. So we're going to jump into Tower of Babel in just a minute, but before that, Drew and I had a impromptu trip to the comic book store.
Yeah. I was sitting at home, and Alex was like, hey, you want to go to a comic shop?
Yeah.
I'm in town. And I was like, I don't want to spend any money. And I ended up going and spending money.
Yeah, I have that effect on Drew. It's a secret superpower that's coming out. I think I was exposed to Terrigen Mists. And my inhuman superpower is getting my friends to spend money.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was my first time going to a comic shop in years. Like since maybe we went to that game.
Yeah, that might be right.
And Oklahoma that was City. Pre-pandemic, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
So, man, that was already years ago.
That's, well,
I bet it's coming up on 2 years at least.
Probably.
That's crazy. So, in lieu of our what you've been reading, yo, and maybe in addition to, we'll kind of see what it has. We're going to show you.
Hey, what you've been buying,
yo. What you've been buying, yo. You want to start off this wonderful journey?
Sure, I'll start. So, We went to two shops. We went to Rock Bottom Comics in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and then we went to the Game Exchange that's really close to my house. That's where I used to go pretty regularly to buy like House of X, Powers of 10 and stuff. Seems like they're not quite rocking as many comics as they used to, but nice. They still had some. So anyway, at Rock Bottom, I was just looking. I was trying to not want to buy anything, but then I think Alex pointed it out. The trade paperback of the collection Time Before Time that he let me borrow a couple of was out. So the collected numbers 1 through 5, which I definitely want to read. So I was like, I've got to buy that.
Yeah. It was a cool story. I didn't keep doing it because I had to be pretty picky with what I had to my pickups.
So you can bet this may be one that we cover soon.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good. So I'm excited to read volume one. That's by Declan Shalvey. I don't know the other. I'll just have to say the last names. McConnell, Palmer, O'Halloran, Ostmain, Ilhow.
Yeah, that's a cool story.
So then we went to Game Exchange just to kind of see, were they still selling comics? And they are. And I didn't buy anything current, but I just happened to look. They had some long boxes of used stuff. Mm-hmm. And the first one I flipped through, I saw The Death of Superman.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I've got to get it. And I went to go ask the guy. I was like, how much? There's not a price. And he was like, oh, if it's not in a sleeve, it's 99 cents. And I haven't bought comics in a while, so I don't know if that's anything special. But I went through, and because they had a bunch from the Death of Superman saga, some Funeral for a Friend, Reign of the Supermen. And then I saw this other one, which I keep meaning to read. It's like...
I've actually read a handful of those.
This is just All-Star Superman number one, right?
Yeah.
So... this is one that's on my list to read, and I thought, I'll go ahead and pick up a number one. So, anyway.
Some Supes books.
I mean, this was $5, all of these.
Yeah, $5. You could sell one of those probably and make your money back. We did some, like, quick research just to see what they go for in, like, a used, you know, pretty well-used condition, and there are several bucks.
And I do have most of those, or not most of, but I got a good collection of the Death of Superman storyline. Mm-hmm. So I'll be seeing, like, I have the Death of Superman, like this one, but with the special black sleeve and everything. But I was a noob and I opened it and I read it.
Yeah. What's wrong with you?
So anyway,
I did not pick up anything at Game Exchange, but on our first haul, I basically picked up the continuation of several series that I've been reading, plus one that I wanted to jump into. I got the final... just released, this is either last week, I think it was last week, Strange Adventures. This is the final issue by that creative team that I enjoy so much, Tom King and Mitch Gerards and Evan Shaner this time, doing the art, or splitting art duties with Mitch Gerards. So super excited to knock this one out. I also got the issue 12 and 13 so I can be caught up on the Iron Man run by Christopher Cantwell and team. I think that issue 12 had a different artist. Yeah, Unzueta instead of Cafu. So I haven't seen that yet, but the art I imagine will be still appropriate. And then some of you, if you read comics, any sort of modern frequency, know that the Dark Ages event is going on in Marvel right now. So I got Dark Ages 1 and 2. I read Dark Ages 1 last night, and I'm not going to spoil a bunch of things, but I kept hearing on Twitter that people were going, like, tagging Tom Taylor, who is the writer, and basically saying, like, what have you done? Why did you do this? All, like, jokingly, but, like, you know, just having pretty heavy reactions to a comic book, especially number one. And now I get it. I'm not going to spoil, but there are a lot of people that are not okay at the end of that book. So pretty crazy. I'm excited to see where that one goes. The concept is really cool. I think I can say, like, this isn't really spoilery. Something happens to where there's no more electricity.
Oh, nice.
So that's where we get the Dark Ages thing. And if you think about how many characters rely on some form of electricity,
yeah,
that can pretty quickly present some issues.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a very simplified version of what actually happens, but you'll have to read it. I'll send that home with you. That's all we got. I have been reading some other stuff just lightly here and there, but nothing too much extra.
We might be recording a Sapkin episode today. Maybe if we make it to that, we'll dig into that some.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Hey, do you want to do what you always say at the end and go ahead and plug our socials right now?
Yeah, we should do that right now because I feel like a lot of you don't get to the end of this podcast.
Maybe you don't care for our trivia. Anyway, if you're listening, we really appreciate it. Can't believe we're almost 90 issues episodes in. We'd love for you to reach out to us on Twitter, @2ManComicBook with the number 2, Instagram and Facebook, 2ManComicBookClub, also with the number 2. Give us a call. Tell us what you think. What are you reading, yo? What you been buying, yo? 662-MAN-FAN-8 is our hotline. We'd love for you to join our Discord. The link is in the show notes where you can kind of chat with us about stuff. And I feel like there's something else.
YouTube.
Oh, yeah. If you're listening, find us on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, find us on your podcast app. But anyway, we do have a bunch of videos on YouTube. Subscribe. I mean, that's a really easy way for you to reach out to us, because it's just like you can leave a comment right there. That's the one thing I don't like about podcasts. It's harder to connect. Mm-hmm. And that's why we started a YouTube, so that maybe we could chat with you and show you some panels along the way.
Yeah, it's a much more immersive experience watching this through YouTube. They don't come out, you know, one for one at the same speed as the podcast do, because a lot more work is to go into putting those together. But along with the long form podcast that we do with all the panels coming up on the screen, so you can enjoy the art with us if you don't have access to these books, we may or may not have some plans for stuff that is also going to come that maybe is a little more short form in the future.
And if we don't, then we'll have something else to present to you. Slap bet.
Yeah.
So anyway, I feel like you want to give your personal while we're here.
So you can find me on all social media at Alex Wayne Miller. Wayne is spelled W-A-Y-N-E, just like Bruce Wayne, because you know I am Batman, if you haven't heard. What about you?
You can find me at Drew Morris Comp on Twitter. That's C-O-M-P. Drew Morris Composer Instagram, I think. I've forgotten. I just had a blind spot. Or check out my website, drewmorrismusic.com.
Sweet. You want to jump into some Tower of Babel?
Yeah. So I forgot about it until just now. But so a 60-second catch-up for JLA stands for Justice League America, or Justice League of America. It's basically the collection. This is a DC Comics title.
Yeah.
I should have started with that. Justice League of America is kind of the combination of the heavy hitters of the superhero world in DC. So like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, Aquaman.
Yeah.
And some, you know, they'll sub in other people as they need to. But basically, you know, most DC comics, like hero titled books, you know, like Superman's taking care of Metropolis, Batman's taking care of Gotham, yada, yada, yada. But sometimes there's threats. If this were Marvel, we would call it an Avengers level threat.
You know?
So like a world, a global threat. And the people come, the heroes come together to fight, and that's what happens in the pages of JLA, or Justice League of America, Justice League International, all kinds of stuff like that. So, I feel like this book does a pretty good job of like letting us know what's happening. There's some bad guys that we might need to describe along the way, but that's essentially the Justice League is the best. Or the most powerful heroes,
the DC teaming up, has to offer.
And in this case, their watchtower, their headquarters, is a satellite in space. So, and they have technology that can get them there very quick.
Yeah,
you know, for what it's worth,
because comic books.
Yeah.
We'll jump into JLA Tower of Babel number one. I'm going to give some shout outs to the creative team. Excuse me while I burp off mic. Mark Waid wrote the story. He has done a lot of impressive work in all comics, both Marvel and DC, and some independent works as well. So Mark Waid is the writer. Howard Porter does the pencil. Drew Garassi is the inker. Ken Lopez does the letters. And Pat Garahi. That's a tough name for me. I apologize, Pat, for misspelling your name, or mispronouncing your name, rather. It says Heroic Age Separations. I'm not sure what that is. I've never heard of like a separator, or I don't know. It just says Heroic Age Separations. And then Tony Bedard is the associate editor, with Dan Raspler as the editor. Drew, start your engines and take us through JLA number one.
All right. So we open with
Tower of Babel number one, I should say.
Tower of Babel number one. We open in Asia, the Himalayan retreat of Ra's al Ghul. I didn't mention it because I just didn't. Ra's al Ghul is kind of the big bad of this, that you can tell right from the beginning.
Also a pretty iconic Batman villain.
The oftentimes leader of the League of Assassins.
Yep. League of Shadows.
League of Shadows, League of Assassins. They called it
different
names,
right?
Depending on whether you're in the comic books, whether you're in the Arrowverse, whether you're in the Batman Begins verse. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, I can't remember. I don't know what they call it here, but they refer to themselves often as assassins. So I was, and I think he only ever says my league.
If you have seen the Batman Begins movies, the character played by Liam Neeson.
Yes. So, and this was an interesting take. Like I've only ever seen Ra's al Ghul as, and just assuming he's the bad guy and has nefarious reasons, but he has a real, and we're going to get to it quick. I'm not going to spoil it too much.
Yeah.
For like, I'm going to spoil what I'm going to say in like 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. He's got a real Thanos vibe going.
Yeah.
I didn't realize like in this book, they're trying to make you feel for him because he's a very, like he's a carer of the earth. And he feels like humans are a scourge on the earth. He actually calls them 6 million parasites.
Yeah.
Because I guess in 2000 we had about, or 6 billion? 6 billion, billion parasites. Would be more accurate, right? Yeah, that's right. And so he's like getting on, he's basically sentencing one of his minions to death because he accidentally fed this tiger chocolate and it was one of two tigers left.
Like, it was the male.
It was the male. So basically he's walking around. He has this zoo of endangered creatures that he's trying to bring back to life. But basically from this, I'm just going to read this because this is going to make it the easiest.
Yeah. Well, we didn't verify. He didn't just feed the tiger chocolate. The chocolate killed the tiger after he consumed it.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So now they cannot reproduce and the species is going extinct.
Chocolate didn't make him impotent.
Right.
So he's having a discussion with his daughter, Talia, and he says, the only thing that thrives outside these walls are the 6 billion short-sighted parasites who continue to ravage our planet's natural resources. And this is where it was, blah, 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 excellent. In the past, I have been unsuccessful in my efforts to pare the human race to a manageable size. But beginning tomorrow, however, mankind will begin thinning itself. So right there, you're just like, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
We don't know how yet.
Swinging for the fences.
Yeah. And then we turn the page and Batman, or Bruce Wayne, he's not dressed as Batman at this point. You just put two and two together. He's walking through the cemetery and all of a sudden you see this zoom in on his face and he has a shocked expression and he's dropping the roses he was bringing because his family plot, where Martha and Thomas Wayne, his parents are buried, has been excavated and the coffins are gone. And that's how that's the hook.
So I have a couple notes here.
Yeah.
One, it's notated, like Talia asks her father, Ra's al Ghul, how are we going to keep Bruce Wayne out of this? Basically, he's the thorn in our side. And basically he says distracting him was an obvious matter. I cannot believe I never thought of it before.
Yeah.
That's when we see him approaching his parents' grave and they've been grave robbed.
Yeah.
Second, here's the first instance of, I'm going to be a little mean here. I do not like how the faces are drawn in more than half of the pages of these comics.
Yeah.
This shocked expression, like sure, I guess it portrays what it's meant to do, but it looks so like Uncanny Valley, somehow over-exaggerated. I don't even know how to describe it. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see that it's on the screen right now. It just, there's a lot of instances throughout all four of these issues. The art is not bad overall, just especially like Far Away, action's fine, you know, scenes and details. It's nothing that I would write home about, but the faces, any close-up faces or portraits are just absurd to me. And I just couldn't get over that. Like I tried to keep thinking like, maybe this will get better. And it just didn't. Actually, I think in issue three or four, I can't remember, the artist or the penciler changed and it was marginally better, but you could tell that he was still trying to draw in the same style. Anyway, minor complaint. I just don't want to pretend that there aren't issues when there are issues with how these are drawn, at least for me personally. Maybe it doesn't bother you. Anyway.
So we know that Ra's al Ghul's up to something. He's made a comment about keeping Bruce Wayne. Well, he doesn't say Bruce Wayne. He just says the detective or Batman distracted. We turn the page and Martian Manhunter, John Jones, is flying through the air and this is what it's saying, like continuing the conversation. With Batman occupied, our first priority is the Martian telepath. You have the tools with which to trace him. Use them. And then we see Talia and her team, and they shoot him with this
like a missile.
Missile of nanites. And it doesn't really say what it was, but he does say, this is no military shell. It carried no explosive, merely a fine metal dust that won't seem to dissipate. What's in it that's so tenacious? And they zoom in and we see it's a bunch of little mites of some sort.
Mm-hmm. And his eyes kind of grow with an expression of worry.
Yeah. And you do see, like, it shows one of his hands seems to be sizzling a little bit. Mm-hmm. Then we turn the page and there's a forest fire in Germany and Wonder Woman and the Flash, which in this book is Wally West, for what it's worth. They're trying to create a fire break because there's no, the closest water is too far away to utilize it. So they're like knocking down trees, trying to create a fire break. And then they see what's causing it. There's this emblazoned, being running through and they're like, we see him. Let's go get it. And, they're trying to stop him. And Wonder Woman like knocks down this tree to try to baseball bat him.
I think it's a little side note. It's important to note that they kind of jokingly said, you want to race to go to the thing, but it does kind of wink at like, what is important to note later, her competitive nature. Like she's trying to race and trying to one-up him even though he's fast.
So she's about to baseball bat this guy, but the guy grabs it and flings it and somehow hits Flash.
Yeah.
And they're like, run away. And then Flash does one of his classics. All right, let's try to create a vacuum. If we deprive him of oxygen, then the flames will go out. So they start running in a circle together. And then you see that the flames go out and she runs. She's like, there's somebody inside. Oh, it's John Jones, Martian Manhunter. And he's just like all caked with like, burns and stuff like that.
His entire body is like burnt to a crisp. He's basically like,
help me. And then we cut to another. This is like the fast like opening of a movie where we're cutting, showing the state of the world.
Right.
And we're at UN headquarters and they're discussing an impending battle or like threat from the Rapistanians. And I meant to look up to see who else they were bordered with because I don't remember who they're technically fighting with.
Right.
But before they get anywhere, the Atlanteans come in and you're like, we wanted to come mediate because Atlantis is directly related to both of these. But before they really get anywhere, Aquaman and Plastic Man come like flying in through a wall. Like they've burst through.
Yeah. Quite an entrance.
And the League seems to be following him. This is the League of Assassin Shadows, whatever. And they shoot something, and basically they're trying to get everybody clear, but they shoot another of those strange missiles, this time at Plastic Man, and it like basically freezes him solid.
Yeah, if you don't know anything about Plastic Man, he's very much like Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, where he can just stretch and contort and absurd and pretty exuberant ways.
The page right before, he turned himself into a trampoline.
Yeah, just to cushion the blow of Aquaman landing.
And another one's coming for him, and Aquaman says, no, if it hits him while he's in brittle form, and so he jumps out, and he gets hit with something, and then a guy comes running over. Meanwhile, Aquaman is like too distracted to even stop him.
Yeah, and he's like coughing and choking.
One of the guys runs over with a hammer and just like cracks, obliterates Plastic Man.
Yeah.
And then some of the Atlanteans come over like, we need to get you air or water. And somebody's like, no, give him water. And apparently whatever Aquaman was hit with has made him scared of water.
Yeah,
the thing that he needs to survive.
Yeah, so the missile that hit him was like a nerve agent that made him terrified of like not like deep water or swimming, like actual water. Like, I'm not going to drink water. I'm terrified of it. And like Drew said, he can't go very long without actually having water. Like, it will kill him.
Yep. Then we get into the JLA Watchtower and Superman is like inspecting this. Like, they have John Jones in like a Bacta tank from Star Wars. And Flash is putting back the pieces of Plastic Man together. And Aquaman is just like breaking down. But they've kind of realized, there's these nanites. They're just messing with stuff.
Yeah.
And
it's like they're making these elements, like trace elements of magnesium that burst him into the flame anytime it hits open air.
Yeah.
I think it's important to note that that's three instances now. We didn't really mention this. If you're not familiar with Martian Manhunter, fire is a weakness for him and his whole body caught on fire. And then you have Aquaman, who needs water to survive, who's now terrified of water. Mm-hmm. And you have Plastic Man, who I'm sure you've all seen some sort of science experiment. Like if plastic or rubber freezes, it becomes like hard and brittle, almost like glass.
Yeah.
So that's like three very on the nose, pinpointed, specific, tailored weapons against these characters, which is not something they're used to having to deal with.
Yep. And then it seems that they want to reach out to Batman because, you know, he's smart. Maybe he knows something about this. And Superman reaches out with their communicators and Batman's just like, I'll have to call you back. I'm busy. And we see him fighting a bunch of people on a helicopter and basically he's just real short with him. He's like, the League's been hunted by persons unknown. And Batman's like, anybody dead? And he's like, no, not yet. And he's like, well, then I'll deal with this later.
Right.
And then he just like hangs up. And then we kind of go back and they're just still trying to figure things out. And then we get back to Ra's al Ghul and he's looking at these panels. He's like the tower status. And he's like active in 70 seconds.
Yeah.
Shielding earpieces are being provided to all the workers. But before much can, that's all that happens right there. Basically,
you know, right before it went to that panel, Aquaman started to have an epiphany of like, how did they find them mm-hmm. to do this? Like these were very pinpointed attacks. Yeah.
And, for the record, you've probably put this together based on what we said about Ra's, but, he was also looking at a sheet that had Plastic Man X'd out, Aquaman X'd out, and also, Martian Manhunter X'd out. And there's a countdown begun. Now it's to 60 seconds. Now it's to 55. On the next page, we have Superman running, flying around the Daily Planet. And basically, he's just running in there because he wants to know what's going on. He's like, this Daily Planet has the pulse. So he asks Perry, mm-hmm. Perry White, what's going on? And Perry tosses him a newspaper. He's like, you want to know what's going on in the world? Read the newspaper.
Right.
And then a panel jumps in of the countdown saying zero and somebody's hitting a button. And as soon as Clark Kent Superman opens it up, all the words are in gibberish, like complete gibberish. He's like, Chief, is this a joke? And then he looks around and realizes that everywhere, he literally says, it's babble. It's all babble.
Yeah, he like looks in the office. All the printed text is unreadable. Mm-hmm. He looks out his window into the city. All the signage, everything is completely gibberish.
Yeah. And then we turn the page and we have Wally West and Diana, Diana Prince from, it is Diana Prince, right?
Yeah.
I'm the DC fan. they're like, we haven't heard from Green Lantern. So they're going to find him and they find his apartment, Kyle Rayner's apartment. And it is important to know that they make a comment like, we would have gotten this a lot quicker, but all the numbers are messed up and I couldn't quite remember where it was. So they finally find it and they look in. And he's in his Green Lantern outfit, just like sitting in the corner. And he's like, Wally, is that you? And it shows his face and his eyes have gone completely white, making it look like he's blind.
Yeah.
And that's how the issue ends.
Another Justice League member being attacked in a very specific way because Green Lanterns with their power, what's it called?
It's a power ring.
Power ring. They can, basically anything that they can think of or imagine, they can create. But he has to be able to kind of see to kind of manipulate that and actually do something with it. Otherwise, he's just blind with these powers swinging into blackness. Yeah. So we have four JLA members very crippled in mm-hmm. very different and specific ways to their power sets. And then, issue ends.
So, it's kind of a decent timing to take a short break and we'll be back to finish this up.
Number two in just a minute. Bye.
Or number 44, whichever way you want to look
JLA
at it.
JLA Tower of Babel Part 2. Numbers is hard. We'll be right back. And we're back with Part 2 of Tower of Babel. Again, creative team, just the base one. Mark Waid's doing the story. Drew Garassi in the inks and Pat Garahey on the colors. And then Howard Porter, of course, on pencils. So jumping into this one, we see Ra's al Ghul just kind of like in Mission Command watching the world fall apart because as it ended, the whole planet basically is seeing everything in gibberish and that would present itself to be a problem. So the world's falling apart, stock markets are crashing, the world economy is about to collapse completely. It's just a bad space. And then suddenly Batman, who if you remember at the beginning of issue one, noticed his parents were grave robbed, bursts into the scene and like starts screaming, "Where are the bodies of my parents?" So being the greatest detective in the world, he quickly found out that Ra's al Ghul was behind this whole thing. And that's what he was doing, why he was being so short with Superman whenever he tried to reach out to him and get some help. So Ra's al Ghul basically is like, lower your weapons. There's little that you can do to match him when he's in this state. Like, you're not, you know, you're just going to make him even more mad. So Ra's al Ghul is kind of like doing the villain monologue thing and gets Batman into this room and then kind of gestures up to the ceiling. And you see these two black coffins, presumably with the parents of Bruce Wayne. And they're over the top of a Lazarus pit, which, if you're not familiar with DC Comics, I wasn't super familiar with the Lazarus pit even until like the movies. But anything that goes into the Lazarus pit can be brought back to life. But I think, is it too early to reveal that maybe he doesn't want that?
No, I don't think so. Okay, I mean, well, I kind of read those intentions from the beginning. Like, if he wanted to, then why would he have stopped him?
Right.
And so, also, this is totally something he could have made happen
on his own
long
before. It's kind of understood in the DC universe that anything that goes into that Lazarus pit can come back to life, but is for sure going to be changed when it comes out. And that's just, you can kind of see Batman maybe not wanting to just mess up the order of things, no matter how personal it would be. Just, it would be not the lay of the law, how it was supposed to work out. So the title of part two is revealed right here to be Seven Little Indians, which,
I don't even know if I understand why that was.
I'm not sure either.
There might have been a very subtle comment made that I didn't catch.
Right. How many JLA members are in this?
Actually, maybe that song that we used to sing, the numbers slowly drop. So maybe it's just like seven little, six little, five little, four little, three.
Yeah.
Down to,
so they're getting picked. It's not a secret now that the Justice League members are slowly getting picked off by very specific means.
I bet that's what it was.
That's probably what it is. So jumping back to New York City in Kyle Rayner's apartment, he's kind of freaking out, obviously, because he's blind.
I didn't know this, and I think they mention it later in the story, but in this, Kyle Rayner is a graphic designer. So like, he's in his other life. So he's just like, without my sight, I'm nothing.
Right.
So I mean, imagine that.
Yeah, you just can't do it. I mean, yeah, for multiple reasons, both in a superhero and out of being a superhero. So he says he just woke up on his own. He couldn't see anything. He's kind of, again, panicking. And then we get Aquaman kind of like having the realization that they're...
Of course. How could we have overlooked it?
Right. What is it? They're pinpointed by like their communication devices. Is that what it is? Or like...
I think he actually just figures that out in another couple pages.
Right.
But so
he Aquaman is the first one to realize that they can find them anywhere because they are all being tracked right now.
Yes.
And they're basically like, get ready for another attack. Mm-hmm. And then these goons burst into that apartment. Flash starts, his suit comes out of
his
rig.
It's right here. It's this next week. As that's happening, Aquaman jumps. I figured it out. It's our signaling devices. Somehow they've gotten hold of our frequencies. So you only spoiled us for like 10 seconds.
Right. My bad, y'all. but again, the specificity of that they had those specific frequencies, you're starting to like wonder like who has access to this information. I definitely was when I got to this point. But anyway, we're in Kyle Rayner's apartment.
I thought you were saying you had access to those frequencies.
Oh, I do. Yeah, I am Batman. Hashtag foreshadowing. so Flash starts suiting up. Diana starts suiting up, and they're going to fight these goons.
Barney Stinson would have been so proud.
Oh, yeah.
Suit up. I've started rewatching that. So
yeah, nice.
How I Met Your Mother.
So putting on their stuff, these guys, they get the quick one on them again. They shoot these little things, and then like this little mechanical spider, it's a more of an insect, goes into Diana's ear, and we just kind of very in a small panel see it in passing, and then it doesn't jump to the rest of that fight. So do you want to take this part right here?
So we kind of jump back to Metropolis,
:
the city of tomorrow, and it's just saying like everything's ground to a halt. People are freaking out, and it zooms on this one kid, just like on the tracks, like the railway tracks.
Right.
Warning signs above the electrified third rail. Adam would be old enough to read it. if it made any sense. And there's it's right. weird. Like this kid is literally just like leaning down to, oh, he fell. So, somehow, I'm just like, why would you be doing that? But yeah, Superman
he
comes
fell into the railway and didn't read the sign. To
Superman gets him and sets him down and he tells everybody, get home. Stay in your, leave the streets clear for emergency vehicles. You know, right. like he's still being, he's trying to keep everybody safe. And at about that point, he starts talking to Oracle, who is kind of like a hub of information here.
She's the gal in the chair.
Mm-hmm. And she's talking and they've realized that it's actually like a sine wave that is impending. Like Superman's like, oh, I can hear it now. Cause they're talking. Mm-hmm. And he's like, so it's somehow broadcasting a signal straight to the language centers of our brain, creating a universal aphasia that makes the written word incomprehensible. He's like, so how do we jam the signal? And she says, unless you have 6 billion pairs of earplugs, I have no idea.
Right. It's basically creating like mass severe dyslexia across the entire world. So we get back into this fight here, and there's somebody in this like green.
Yeah. And I was trying to like
gladiator suit
after reading Flashpoint. There was somebody that kind of looked like this, and I kept trying to figure it out. But
if it was them,
yeah, if it was them.
So Diana had that little thing fly into her ear, and then this person like comes up to them and is like, "Does that hurt?" And they start kind of fighting a little bit, and this person I think that's a she is boasting like, "Hey, I'm your equal in every way. After we put that thing in you, there's nothing that you can do. You can try me," and then Diana, who just got punched and is bleeding, she's like, thanks for the permission. And they go into like this intense fight.
They're camping in some circuses.
Yeah. That's funny. And then it kind of alludes that this battle has been going on for a super long time. Like,
I think Kyle is like holding her and like trying to figure it out. And somebody says this, and I think it's the easiest way to explain it.
Right.
The man who designed this trap realized that Wonder Woman's competitive nature can be a great weakness. In a battle, all that could make her surrender is a heart attack. So, like, they wanted to trap her in a virtual reality fight, and her body is starting to manifest these things, mirroring her imagined exertion, is what it says.
So, did you read it as virtual? I guess maybe. Like, basically, I just read it that, like, that bug is, like, on her brain or something, making her think that she's in this fight.
I mean, it said VR chip.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just...
I guess I missed that part.
Yeah, it's just right there. I'm imagining that it's some sort of chip that's
making
her imagine it all.
Yeah. But yeah, she's just actually not fighting anybody. She's just laying there essentially dreaming
it's,
it.
It's getting, like in The Matrix, whenever Neo's in the chair getting pummeled.
Right, and they're trying to give her a heart attack because whoever this mastermind is behind all this has decided like that's basically the only way we're going to stop Wonder Woman.
Yeah. And then somebody comes in, they've got a gun trained on Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And this part, I thought it makes, because I always wondered, you know, Flash is fast, but how fast is he? Apparently he's fast enough that if it's a normal bullet, the second he feels it touch his flesh, he can go intangible and it'll go through him.
Right.
But he says that he's like, instinctively, Flash begins to vibrate the instant he feels the pressure of the bullet. He wants it to pass through him. It doesn't.
Yeah.
And somebody yells off, this is really helpful. Thanks. Success. The vibratory projectile has lodged into his spinal column. He is experiencing epileptic seizures at light speed. So yeah. thanks for the help.
Which is a very, they kind of tripped and fell back into the 1970s to where they had to explain what was going on. I would have liked that to be kind of a overhead, narration kind of thing to give us what was going on, or somebody figure that out later in a lab when they're looking at him. But yeah, so he's having seizures at light speed. So Flash is again taking out in a very specific way. Mm-hmm. And we see Aquaman reaching out to Lord Crano. Reaching out to Vulko, saying that he needs his something sent there by the JLA transporter. And he's basically like telling him, we can't, people need you right now.
So this was back in 2000. It's been 21 years. Yeah. I don't feel like I've read Justice League where they have transporter technology.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if that just disappeared in one of the random reboots. Right. Or they just try not to lean on it because then it makes too much possible.
Right.
So we turn the page and we're back with Superman. And I think it's interesting, the Fortress of Solitude is in the Andes right now, not the Arctic Circle. The North Pole. I mean, the Andes are like Asia. Is that right?
I think so.
So anyway, I guess this Fortress of Solitude has been some different places. But he runs in and he takes something and he comes back. And it's basically, he has a white noise generator, a huge one that he's manipulating.
He got from Brainiac, yeah. Apparently.
And he's going to put it over the entirety of Metropolis. So he's basically, he's making it to where Metropolis can happen.
Which is about 8 million exist. People.
Yeah.
5.9 billion to go.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway.
We end up back in the room with their fighting. They've already taken out Flash. They've already taken out Wonder Woman. Kyle Rayner's still in there blind. And he basically is like, I'm not going down without a fight. And he just starts blindly creating things.
I love this.
And just, they say he's gone berserk. And it says it's a valiant effort. Kyle Rayner possesses the most powerful weapon in the universe, but has no way to aim it, no vision to shape it. Like all artists, he must see what he wants to draw. And there's kind of like a, I don't know, like a goblin-esque looking creation that he makes. But he's just, again, like, if you have an awesome weapon, if you have a gun to defend yourself, but you're blind, there's kind of very little that you can actually do. And they take him out pretty quickly. They just shoot him in the back when he's angled in a certain way. I almost said when he's not looking.
And we jump back to Ra's al Ghul's place with the Lazarus Pit. And they're basically having a conversation like, you can't do this. You just can't do this. And then they kind of say, you use them as bait. What's that all about? What do you really want? And basically over the course of this, he does say, my League of Assassins.
Yeah.
So I thought I heard that here. And he was like, how did you get all this? And then Ra's pulls out this red crystal and Batman, it just shows him. He's like, oh my God.
Yeah. By the way, I hate his face right there. It makes me so mad. Because the top panel, the same one, Batman looks awesome. He's like throwing this batarang and like the art's cool. The art is cool in every other single panel. And then it gets down to this dopey looking, you know, like jaw slack. I don't know. It's not a good look. Yeah. It's probably just shocked expressions, I think, are the ones that are the most difficult for.
Just look at Superman on the front of the next issue.
Oh, it's bad. Drew and I broke into audible laughter when we saw this yesterday.
Yeah. So we turn the page. We've left the Lazarus Pit and the League of Talia and her crew is like, very well, we leave. And somebody says no. And it turns out John Jones, Martian Manhunter, he's in some sort of Atlantean suit that's keeping water on him. I think later they say, like, this was made so that Atlanteans can exist on land.
Yeah, it's not designed for combat. It's on the next page.
It's just keeping him from being exposed to air.
And which makes he'll catch on fire.
He's trying to help, but then Talia takes off Wonder Woman's crown, her tiara, and throws it at him and like pierces it, and the fire starts. And then Superman shows up and he's like, she's mine. Like, yeah. Going for Talia.
He uses his laser vision to like seal it back together.
His heat vision very multi-purpose.
Oh,
I've seen him do all kinds of things. Like, so you're this weird glass plastic looking suit, you're able to use it to seal it back up.
Right, kind of like solder it.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's the Swiss Army knife.
Frost breath would have been a better choice.
Yes.
Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Yeah.
That would have been, well, I guess, yeah, because you put out
the little section of the water.
You'd put out the fire.
Yeah.
Because now there's a fire burning in this place.
Right.
In Kyle's apartment.
Yeah. Not the smartest move, Soups.
Sorry, Kyle.
Yeah, sorry about your apartment. Yeah. Oh, and that you're blind.
And so while this is happening, apparently, I didn't know this, but we're back in Ra's place, and he has these view screens up, so we can actually see Superman fighting Talia. He's been watching the whole while. But Batman's like, Superman, can you hear me? And helpfully, Ra's lets us know, you're not going to reach through here. My facility is shielded. Your
signal's not going to penetrate these walls.
Yeah, so Batman makes for an exit. He's like, don't let him leave. But meanwhile, Superman, he's back and he's like, what have you done? And she pulls out this kryptonite.
Did you mention that it's red earlier?
I just said a red crystal. I didn't say it was even kryptonite. But now we realize it's kryptonite. And she says, the man it belongs to performed a series of experiments on it. He managed to accelerate its radioactive half-life, as indicated by its color shift. His idea was to make it less lethal, but still crippling to the Kryptonian physiology. So she's like, you'll probably heal, but you'll wish you were dead.
She says, it may not kill you, but you wish you were, yeah.
And then we cut back, and Batman has made it out, and he's saying, Superman, for the love of God, retreat, retreat, get out of there before it's too late. And then we see full page Superman is like...
His skin's like pain, transparent. You're just seeing like Superman made of muscles almost. And he's screaming in pain. Yeah.
Yeah. This might be some of the most pain he's ever felt. I don't know. And that's what, and Batman's was like running down the hill with a League of Assassins in pursuit. He's like, that's why Ra's wanted me distracted. He couldn't risk me warning you. All the plans, the traps, the signal trackers, they were mine. Superman, I did this to you. And so we see that. And meanwhile, Kyle is knocked out. Flash is convulsing. Wonder Woman's knocked out. And Superman is in translucent agony.
Yeah.
To be continued.
End of issue. And we got it right there. If you might have figured it out, kind of writing on the wall. But Batman designed all of the things that took out all of the Justice League members. And you were kind of wondering... Yeah. Maybe like why hasn't Batman been picked off yet? You know, he's even in their backyard. So yeah, pretty crazy twist that all of the things that took everybody out were at the design of Batman.
Hey, if you didn't know this already, did you guess that?
Yeah, curious. Like you said, this is almost 22 years.
Yeah.
So the fact that this story is still being talked about today is a pretty big deal. I think it's a pretty cool premise. There's obviously more. Now the question is, why in the heck did Batman have all of this?
Yeah.
What was he planning to do with it? Even if he
you'll have to stay tuned to find out.
Yes.
Or go find it yourself, which we always recommend. And we read all of these on DC Universe Infinite. Like it is 22 years later, and you can find this stuff on your phone.
Yep.
So.
Pretty easy to do.
Check it out. Give it a read. Maybe read it before you come back to listen to our wrap-up episode next week.
We'll cover issue 45 and 46. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Tower of Babel's part 3 and 4. That's not confusing. we got a little bit of time. Do you want to jump straight into some trivia?
Yeah. Oh, goodness. It's time for our lightning round trivia, where the questions are faster. Then I got really bummed out by Plastic Man getting shattered.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. Yeah. I feel like I haven't read much Plastic Man.
See, I've only ever seen him in JLA events. Like I feel like I saw him in Identity Crisis or Infinite Crisis.
Cool.
Maybe.
Maybe I should find out. There's got to be some solo series.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Cool. I'll go first. We alluded to this a little bit earlier, and we were prepping, and then I found some answers and thought, this will work out for some trivia. We had a run-in earlier with the Oracle. I want to know if you know, there's possible for 2 points here. I'm thinking really how to word this. First, who is the Oracle? Like, what is their name? And then second question, when and how did they become the Oracle?
I mean, the only guess I could have is Barbara Gordon. Because that's the only name I personally know as ever having been the Oracle.
That is correct.
So that was
that was Barbara Gordon.
Okay, it just looks different than
it looks
later
very
treatment.
Different.
Yeah. What was the second question?
How did they become Oracle?
Okay, well, I don't know. See, this is probably massively wrong because most of my experience with the Oracle comes from like just random readings of various Batman comics, and the TV show Gotham, where it's a very big thing.
Right.
And in that one,
if they did it the same.
I'm just going to go with the Gotham answer. Like, it was in Gotham, it was a computer system that had, like, could tap into anything that Wayne Enterprises created, and she's just the one that happens to have access to it. So, I don't know. I don't know how else she would get it. It's probably some more like mystical, supernatural type thing, but I wouldn't even know where to begin without making just a guess.
That's fine. So basically what happened, the events of The Killing Joke were actually before this.
Okay.
I read The Killing Joke. I actually have it up there. It's super good. It is probably the darkest comic I've ever read. Mm-hmm. Like there's... I'll spare details in case we have any younger listeners on here, but it's for mature audiences, we'll just say that. So some very bad stuff. The Joker does some very bad things to Barbara Gordon and like permanently injures her and assigns her to a wheelchair basically for the rest of her life. And to still, you know, she was Batgirl, to still be able to help, she basically just takes her smarts and her intelligence and then the resources of the Waynes and becomes Oracle after that. But yeah, I was blown away also. I thought about making this a trivia, but I'm just going to add this on. The Killing Joke, iconic comic book, not just Batman story, like truly incredible comic, came out in 1988, which is 12 years before this. So
I didn't like, realize that.
I didn't either, especially because when I read it, I did not feel like I was reading a late 80s comic at all in any manner. It was just that good. Is that Alan Moore? Can you look up there and see? It's a hardcover. Yeah.
Alan Moore and Brian Boland.
Brian Boland. Flip through some of that and look at the art, like, just real quick. I know where, like,
yeah, this is not 80s.
It does not look old at all. Like, it looks, like, stylized for sure, but it looks very good. Like, you could absolutely see this being a modern.
I mean, something as simple as The Gradation.
Because
I'm reading some 80s comics right now, Doom Patrol and Animal Man.
Right.
And they are just blocks of color. I feel like I'm reading, you know, Sunday Funnies.
Right. Yeah, no, like the art in this looks incredible, like super detailed. It's,
yeah, I would never have thought that this feels like it's newer than what we're covering right now. Oh, yeah,
for sure, and it's 12 years older. So you can leave that out. I might read that later just to touch up again. But the fact that looked so good, it threw me off when I saw Oracle. I was like, that can't be Barbara Gordon. She hasn't, just because of how good this comic looked, I thought for sure that this couldn't have come before it. But anyway, just fun fact, 1988 is when The Killing Joke came out, which is 12-ish years before what we're reading happened. 1 point for you, my sir.
All right. So I have one. So this is another, the potential for multiple answers. Mm-hmm. So I'll let you keep answering until you get one wrong.
Cool.
We commented that the Fortress of Solitude was in the Andes.
Mm-hmm.
When it's normally at the North Pole.
Yeah.
So I looked up, where else has it been?
Ooh.
And we already talked about one before we started. Do you remember where that was?
Nope.
Okay. Well, so this is according to screenrant.com. Okay. And it's not made in a list, so bear with me.
Yeah.
So other than the Andes, which we've discussed, and the Arctic, can you name any other places the Fortress of Solitude has been?
How many guesses do I get before it stops? Just immediately, if I go in wrong, it's done.
Yeah.
That's fair. If there's no lid. Fortress of Solitude. I have two guesses immediately. Three, maybe. I feel like one, just for cool factor, I'm going to put in there. Is he ever had one on the moon?
It doesn't specifically say the moon.
Dang.
No.
Okay. After that, I was going to guess Kansas for him being there. Mm. And then I was going to guess somehow having one in the outskirts of Metropolis or okay. Gotham or...
So currently, at least, I'm maybe about a year behind now in my reading.
Dang, the Bermuda Triangle is the one we were talking about earlier.
He recently moved it to the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah.
Let's see. Other than the... I'm just going to read this straight off of here. Other than the Arctic, the Fortress of Solitude has been in space, where it was an old reprogrammed ship left behind by Brainiac.
Cool.
It's also been in the Antarctic. Has also been underwater, which is kind of cool.
Cool.
I would have left it there.
Yeah.
Even used as eventually used as a base of operations of Supergirl. Superman created the underwater sanctuary to better protect the seven seas. Blah 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 blah. He also had a Fortress of Solitude based out of South America in the Cordillera de Condor mountain range.
Okay. Cool.
So. Yeah.
Several different spaces. Now I know. Cool. Any closing thoughts?
No.
Again, find us on social media. We have those down in the show notes and we listed them earlier. Mostly just Two Man Comic Book or Two Man Comic Book Club on all the things with the number two. Like and subscribe, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else and we'll read it if it's a 5-star review. Share this with a friend. People like stories, people like comics, even if they don't think they do. I think that's been it.
Well, I've got one thing.
Ah, yes.
If you enjoyed this, kind of looking back at kind of older comics. Mm-hmm. Then we'd love you should join our Discord.
Yeah.
So you can hear about stuff because we're working on something that we think you might like.
Yeah, it's gonna be pretty cool.
Especially if you like DC comics.
Yeah.
It could be a big one. So stay tuned for more details. I don't know exactly how much Alex wanted to divulge, so I'm speaking in vagaries.
No, that's fine. I think it's safe to iron out a few more things before putting on the shirt.
Yes. The shirt.
Pushes it putting on the cowl.
Yeah.
Does Batman iron his cowl?
I mean, I've always thought it was like Kevlar.
Some special material that, yeah. Who knows? Do you know that? Tweet at us, Two Man Comic Book Club. Cool. Cool. That's been it. We'll see you next time on the Two Man Comic Book Club podcast. Bye. The Two Man Comic Book Club podcast is hosted by Alex Miller and Drew Morris. Our guy in the chair is Torrance Watkins. Logos and design work are by Tessa Price. Original theme music and compositions are by Drew Morris. Numbers is hard.